Welcome to the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
And glad to have you back as our listeners. This interview is conducted with Anna Walker. Anna Walker has exhausted more passports than your podcast team has had hot dinners. She was reared in Finland, and as an adult was educated in the United States, England, and Finland, with a work history that has taken her from Finland to Norway, to England, to Cambodia, and back again to England, where at present, may not be forever, she's got itchy feet. At Bristol Royal Hospital, she is active as a specialist pediatric dietitian. Her experience in dietetic care chimes with that of others who deal with obese children. And it's led her to question if a link exists between obesity and neurodevelopmental disorders that sometimes manifest as autism. What the aspects of neurodevelopmental disorders might be that contribute to obesity in children, and very practically, how clinically to manage the diets of these children. She's provided us with some windows into the world that she and her patients and their families inhabit, which are listed for you in the cover note that accompanies this podcast. Maybe we'll refer to those titles in a bit, maybe not, but first, welcome, Anna.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with some anecdotes of your patients with obesity and the possibility or the certainty of neurodevelopmental disorder, and how those things have interacted in your experience as you deal with those patients.
So in obesity, we have noticed, we actually looked at our data of the clinics of complications of excessive weight, that our tier two obesity service, and we looked at the data of the children who come to the obesity clinic in Bristol and Liverpool, and we found that actually 27% of the children do have autism, which is a quite high number.
It's a really high number.
It is a high number.
How does that compare with the percentage or the proportion of patients with autism that you see in other eating disorders, say anorexia, bulimia?
That I can't really answer to you, but I wouldn't say necessarily anorexia or bulimia, but a lot of children with autism do have eating disorder. So 60 to 70%, well, not necessarily eating disorder, but altered eating. So 60 to 70% of children with autism do have a typical eating pattern. And then this eating pattern can either cause underweight or it can also cause obesity. So it kind of depends on where that child's, what kind of sensory processing behaviors that child has, and therefore what kind of foods they choose as a result of it. And also how their interoception is. So basically whether they feel hunger, whether they need to constantly eat, they don't have like an appetite control, or whether they don't actually feel the hunger so that they need to be prompted to eat. So within autism spectrum, you get a quite wide range of problems. But it does have the both sides. It has the obesity side of it, and it does also have the side when the children are underweight and comes with the micronutrient deficiencies. But I would say in both of the groups, there are likely to be micronutrient deficiencies.
So tell us a little, I think that you've hinted at the publication in Archives of Disease of Childhood, Complications of Excess Weight Seen in Two Tier 3 Pediatric Weight Management Services. Mm-hmm. What else did you find?
Well, in that study, we just looked at what kind of complications there are. And the dyslipidemia is really the first thing that is, the most common complications of excessive weight is dyslipidemia across the whole of the whole of those children that were looked at. And then the hypertension was the second one. And then the hepatic disorders, from consumption, high calorie consumption, fatty liver type of issues. And many children also have a sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting from the autism point of view, or the learning disabilities, or the ADHD point of view, that there was a quite vast number of those children in those children that we looked at, and many more who don't actually have the diagnosis yet, but were in a process of having the diagnosis.
Something that might be of interest that occurs to me is the response of patients to GLP-1 antagonists, that is GLP-1 receptor agonists, the sort of drug that makes you feel full, that makes you lose your interest in food, really. And I'm sure, even if you haven't done a systematic approach, even if you haven't approached this in a systematic manner, that some of the obese children whom you have treated have been treated with such agents. Mm. And it would be interesting for me to think about whether children with neurodevelopmental disorders respond differently to these agents from neurotypical children with obesity in whom they are used. Do you have any, I come back to the word, anecdotes?
Yeah. I don't know if we actually really looked at it, like in detail, whether they respond different, like we don't have like a data to say. Mm-hmm. But in practice, children with autism, they can be very sensitive for any sensory stimuli. So not all the same approaches are always appropriate for them.
Yes.
And they can be very rigid in their behavior, and introducing new, whether it's medications or foods or anything like that, can be extremely challenging. But, if we do manage to give them, then I don't think there is any difference between the, with the children who don't have autism to those who do have autism. It's more to do with whether we are able to actually administer such medications or treatments for those children. Because with autism, you do need to be quite creative how you treat that or manage that child's obesity, also from that dietary perspective.
Those are injectable agents, so if you could sneak up on the child, you might be able to do it without their noticing.
You might, but I think you will cause so much upset that it's not probably worth the effort then. So it's much better, basically, what you're trying to do. Because we have, in our team, we have psychologists, for example, who can then work with the behavioral side of things so that we can introduce certain new management strategies for these children.
Tell us about some of those new management strategies. I have another anecdote to share with you, but I'll wait until after the podcast. In any event, the new management strategies that work with autistic children in this regard.
So for example, children, autistic children, they have a very, usually very narrow range of foods that they do eat. So even with obesity, the range of foods is still narrow, but it can be a lot of those foods. And often they are very energy dense foods as well. And there might be a lot of the foods that they do have. There's less fruit and vegetables because they don't like the variations in a way that the food looks like, or the colors of the food. So there tend to be more foods that are pre-packed processed foods.
So standardized foods.
Standardized foods. So then if we think about with our, let's say with those children who are more willing to eat a wider diet, non-autistic children, not to say that they all are willing to eat a wider diet, because children tend to have a quite poor diet overall. But let's say they are, and they're mm-hmm. happy to eat, for example, fruit and vegetables, then it's much easier to introduce dietary changes, because you can increase the amount of fruit and vegetables in their diet and reduce the high energy dense foods in their diet simultaneously. But the children with autism, you can't introduce more fruit and vegetables because they just won't take them. So then you need to try to find approaches how you can limit the amount of food that they're actually eating during the meal times. And that can be tricky, because it could be that that meal needs to consist 20 chicken nuggets and that's it. And then there might need to be another meal in 2 hours that has 10 potato waffles. And they can be very rigid in their thinking. So then we dietitians don't necessarily have the behavioral tools. And that's why we got the psychologist, for example, to help us to kind of soften those approaches and think how we can, what kind of behavioral things we can do to get those changes going. Because if there needs to be that certain amount of chicken nuggets and then there is not, that child can have a tantrum, they can throw food on the floor, all sorts of things, which makes it very challenging then for that parent to manage it.
I can't really imagine what it would be like to live in that particular hurricane. Very difficult indeed. What insights do the psychologists offer to coax these kids into more flexible behavior? It's a difficult question, I know, and it's not your field. But again, there will be patients who were helped, patients whom you've attended. And tell us about some of them.
So I guess some of the things that can be done with these children is relaxation techniques. I think that's what our psychologists do as well. They help them to diffuse the stress situations. And then I think there needs to be a lot of work with the parents as well, because parents need a lot of coping mechanisms as well in these situations. And what we do see is that necessarily that kind of strict, you know, trying to push your own agenda, for example, putting those vegetables on the plate when the child doesn't eat them, is not a helpful approach at all.
Mm-hmm. I would be so frustrated, I'm sure. Mm. And I'm sure that both the child and the parents are frustrated. Mm. A difficult situation, as I commented. It comes down then, really, to how these children are best to be helped. And if you have any tips that you can share with our listeners, I think everybody would be grateful.
Well, what weight management is about, it is about reduction of calories. So that's where it is. So we can't change anything unless we change the amount of calories that is eaten. So whether the child has autism or not, that is the only approach to get to where we want to go.
Is there any role for increased physical activity? Can you help an autistic child become more interested in sports?
I mean, that's a really good question, and I haven't really mentioned that at all. But absolutely, physical activity is very important. However, physical activity on its own does not help in a reduction of weight with the children when they are that heavy. So it does help in the process, but at the same time, we do need to do the calorie modifications because the children that we do see, they are excessively overweight. We're talking about morbidly obese children. So just by increasing activity, it doesn't do the trick itself. And therefore, that dietary modification that is important. So what makes it challenging with autism is because, like I said earlier, the diet is so narrow and restricted. So, for example, if they need to have those bags of crisps, how can we make that less calorific? Could it be that the mom opens that bag of crisps? Is it okay for the child that the mom opens the bag of crisps we don't want to deceive children in autism generally. So I know many listeners might be like, what's she saying now? But really in these cases, when the child is so heavy and we know that it's a danger for their health, we need to get them to lose weight, can that mom take something out of the bag before giving it to the child? So we are talking about even tiny little things here. We are not saying, okay, you got you can no longer have bags of crisps at all because it doesn't necessarily work. We're talking about tweaking things.
Drop of water on stone. Well, that is certainly a good place it's a bit desperate, isn't it? Life with an autistic child, especially a life with an autistic child whose neuroatypicality manifests itself in an eating disorder. And I'm looking forward to learning more from your team about how these disorders eventually can be better addressed. That would be a real advance. Well, so now the question comes at this time in our podcast of whether you'll share with us a song that addresses your bringing up in Finland, your time working with refugees in the camps in Cambodia, or your life in happy Bristol. What have you chosen for us?
Well, I think my long-term favorite song is Radiohead's cover of Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here.
And not a bad choice at all. Listeners, that'll be on the Spotify Espigan favorite songs list. And when you listen to it, when you hear it on the radio, think of Anna.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much for being our guest today.
Thank you.